The topic I want to deal with today is identity creation. Now, I've talked about this in the past because, well, I think it's very important. So, who do you want to be? And every time you hear me ask that question about be, capitalize B-E in your own mind. And what do you want to do? And capitalize D-O in your own mind. And what do you want to have? And capitalize have, H-A-V-E, in your own minds. Because we do what we be, and we have what we do. So we be, and then we do, and then we have. And when those things are in alignment, all kinds of good things can occur. I believe the only way to be, do, and have what you want and what I want enjoyably and enduringly, I'm not talking about a flash in the pan or a momentary success. I'm talking about a long-term situation, is to have an identity that includes that beingness, doingness, and havingness. We all have many impulses to create and express in the world. Unlike my avocado tree or my lemon tree, which are limited in how they can express their consciousness, you and I have lots and lots of choices of how to express those impulses to create and express in the world. And if we block these impulses by, I'll say, a misidentity, it's going to lead to frustration and often worse, illness and even worse. So misidentity, M-I-S hyphen identity is the way I'm visualizing this. So what is that? It is when we believe something that is untrue about us and we take it in and make it a part of our identity. If I drew a stick figure of you and I put a circle around that, it could be a stick figure of me as well. That whole area, including the line that represents that outlying border, is our identity. It is how we view ourselves in the world. It is how we engage. It is the person that we believe we are that exchanges energy with things, with people, with ideas in our lives. You've seen grass growing through cracks in sidewalks. I've seen that in the city in New York, and I've seen it in San Francisco, and I've seen it in other places. And like me, I bet you were impressed with the impulse of that grass. Despite the hardship of that environment, it is trying to grow. And you would say, wow, those environments are, I don't know, difficult, maybe even impossible. But that grass is trying to push through the crack in the sidewalk. And it's amazing. Now, I'm guessing, as far as we can tell, the grass doesn't get angry or doesn't get depressed because the sidewalk it was or is blocking it. Its consciousness might be limited to grow and survive, period, end of story. And then, of course, if those impulses grow and survive are what is propelling that grass, then you go, it's some sort of path, some sort of avenue that allows for its creation and expression, which in this scenario would be the crack in the sidewalk. It will tend to grow to the light and reproduce through its seeds. And you think, that last sentence, grow to the light and reproduce through its seeds. That sounds kind of like human beings if we added becoming conscious of self. Now, we're thinking that the grass doesn't have self-consciousness. It's just doing what is built into it, its consciousness. But because we can become conscious of self, that is, who we are, before we start seeking the path from our for our creating and expressing, just think of that, becoming conscious of self. That's the identity creation process that starts immediately in life, even before birth, and continues for our entire life. Becoming conscious of self. So what we were conscious of as ourselves at 2 years old and 3 years old and 4 years old and 5 years old, instead of holding on to, I was conscious of myself at 5 years old, period, I'm done. And who I believed I was at five is all I am here years and years later. Now, we would think, that's not a good idea. We wouldn't want to do that. What we were conscious of at five is what we were consciousness of five. And it changes over the course of literally seconds, minutes, days, weeks, months, years from onward. And this starts basically at conception. We start to take in energy that we use to create the structure that I'm referring to as our identity. Bruce Lipton talks about our perceptions creating our reality. He also speaks about the self-protect mode versus the growth mode. If we stay in the self-protect mode in order to defend who we are at that moment, we limit our growth, which is to say, we limit our becoming. So we face challenges, let's say at 5 years old, where somebody is taunting us, making fun of us, our clothing, our looks, our ears, our hair, our fill in a blank. And we will try to defend that because it's designed into us to protect our individuality. And you'd say, okay, I defended who I was or who I believed I was at five, but I'm still open to growing greater awareness of who I am and who I can become. I'm not limited to who I believed I was at 5 years old. So that idea of defending ourselves is really a big challenge, because as we defend that moment, that situation, that image of ourselves, we start to limit ourselves. We limit our becoming. I think we solidify this identity of ourselves as a person needing protection. And as we think more of, I need protection, I need protection, I need protection, I'm a person who needs protection, in the process, we will be giving power over to whatever we're imagining as the threat that we need protection from. So here we are, we think of ourselves as being threatened, we give our power to the threat, and the end result, we would have created an identity of an underpowered, undercapable person. We would have manufactured ourselves. That is not the identity that we're going to want to create. Maybe the one we have created in the past, which puts us in a position now to be able to upgrade that identity. I think it's important for us to understand this. Other people don't create our identities. We do. No matter what other people say or do or don't do or don't say, whether it's positive or whether it's negative, we are the ones that take in the energetic inputs, and we give meanings to them. Somebody looks at us and said, you look nice. We have to take in that energy and accept it. Or not. Oh, no, that's no. And we kind of defend ourselves from that and other compliments. That's a common habit pattern for a lot of people. But if we don't trust the person that's making that statement, we think they're setting us up to be manipulated. Of course, we will perceive that as a threat. Until we take in, which is another variation of the word acquire, I talk about energy acquisition, and we encapsulate, we take in this energy and we identify it as a structure, which is another way of saying this: we protect the energy that we've taken in, and then we translate the inputs as being about us, and we would have to make them be true, accept them as true, before they could have any impact upon us. If we heard these comments coming at us, and we knew they had completely irrelevant to us, they would go flying by, and we would be impervious to the impact, simply because It didn't relate to us, and we didn't relate to it. It may seem like fiction to talk about other people not creating their identities, particularly if we grew up in a volatile or a hostile family where the inputs and the environment were really difficult. But it's true. It's true. The fact of the matter is, no matter how difficult, how volatile, how kind or unkind people were to us, it is our meanings that we accepted, that we attached to those energy exchange experiences that have the impact. So in this situation, it is clear, and it is a fact, that we are far more resilient than we ever imagined. Our brains are endowed with a plasticity that enables growth no matter how old or how young we are. So all of this possibility still exists no matter what was done or not done to us or for us. I would think that many of the struggles that we face are due to our desire to have, capital H-A-V-E, have without first taking steps to be and to do. Now you recognize that advertising and a lot of marketing are geared to convince us of what we should have. Buy this, buy that, have this, have that, go on vacation, do all of this stuff. Some advertising, some marketing is focused on what we should do, but little, if any, is aimed at us suggesting that we develop our being, our sense of who we are. You know why? Because our five-sense orientation, and this is true of not only you and me, but pretty much everybody, is this five-sense orientation leads us in the direction of having, because it's easy to perceive things to have. You look around, and you look at stores, and you look at magazine ads, you look at any kind of thing, you look at material goods, you go, well, it's easy to define in your own mind that it would be cool to own this item and that item and another item and a different car and the new outfits and on and on and on. Money, material, good objects, all this stuff are appealing. But when you really think of it, this challenge with money, is it can be elusive due to its nature. You know, everybody says, I want more money. Yeah, me too, me too. Money comes and goes. It doesn't stay for most people until money seems to be available, that it's actually earning money through your own investments. So you invest money and now it's growing all by itself, whether you're awake or sleeping, no matter what you're doing or not doing. That's a whole different ball game. Most of us struggle to get into that position, but when we get there, it's like, oh, this is nice, this is cool. This idea of doing is really important because we need to move. We need to move our bodies. We need to move energy. We need to express ourselves. We need to create. And it's very difficult to do that if we're inert. So doing is easier for people who seem to have a decent relationship with their physical bodies and their judgment of their physical capabilities. While there is such a thing as a natural, physically skilled person, and you see some of these people, maybe they come out of the womb with physicality that is pretty impressive. But for most of us, we have to practice using our bodies in order to achieve a level of self-acceptance. I haven't really noticed that a child, first time they tried to stand up, they stood up successfully. The first time they took a step, they took a step successfully. First time they tried to walk and run, they walked and ran successfully. I've not seen that. Maybe people do it, but I've never seen it. We would have just practiced those items until we have the identity that I'm a stander. I now know how to be physically upright in the crib. And I know how to take steps. I know how to run. I know how to ride a bike all of that stuff involved a lot of little baby steps to get us to that place. When I look at it, I think that identity creation is usually the result of reverse engineering. This is what I mean by that. We do something, and then we add the meaning of that experience to our sense of self. I go into a store in a little while, and I have an interaction with somebody in the store. I'm going to add meaning to that interaction, and it will become part of my identity. Oh, I'm skillful, I'm charming, I'm awkward, I'm confused, or have difficulty understanding, and on and on. Whatever I choose to interpret and associate to those exchanges is going to be added to my sense of self. And if we succeed at being effective, we may add good at talking to clerks, good at shopping, good at finding value in a retail environment. Or if the opposite occurs, I am not good at walking into a store with no shopping list, choosing clothing or choosing items off a shelf. I'm not good at asking for help in a retail environment, and many other things. And you can hear the difference between those two scenarios, as one is more growth-oriented and one is more self-protective and self-limiting. In Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, a famous book written by John Gray, he says that men are problem solvers. Present a problem to a man, and his identity turns him into a dog on a bone. I gotta solve that problem. Now, if the problem were enunciated by a woman, sometimes a woman is just talking about a problem just to talk about a problem. For a man, it's like, no, that's a red flag. You just waved the red flag in front of me, and now I've got to do something about it. It's like, that's not my intention. I wasn't raising a red flag. I was just making a comment about a problem. If our identities, now I'm talking about a man, if our identities contain to solve problems, we're going to have better feelings about ourselves, and we're going to jump into the fray. So if somebody says, I got a problem, like, let me help. Well, I don't want your help. No, I insist. But on the other hand, if we have experiences where we weren't effective problem solvers, when somebody says we have a problem, we're going to tend to fight it or avoid dealing with the problem. We're going to put our hands in our pockets and walk away. And as we know, when we have problems that for ourselves personally, if we neglect them, while some of them will solve themselves or go away because they weren't that important in the first place, neglected. I can recall having a client who had a barn in which he kept vintage cars. And one day in a call, he said he was really upset that the roof of his barn collapsed. So I asked him to take me through the creation of this problem. And he said, well, once I noticed one tile blew off the roof in a rainstorm, and I didn't do anything about it. Then the next storm came and blew a few more tiles off, and it rained, and the wood got soaking wet, and I didn't do anything about it. And it went through this whole scenario, and the roof got worse and worse and worse until it finally collapsed because he didn't do anything about it. He couldn't take the action. His identity didn't give him the room to ask for help or to call on somebody to find out what it would cost to have one tile on his roof repaired or two repaired. And ultimately, he got down to it. And the day he was talking to me about it, he said, it's going to cost me $3,000 to $5,000 to fix this problem. Whereas he knew, and I know, and you now know, that to replace one tile or two tiles on a roof would never have cost $3,000 to $5,000. So problems not handled can worsen. Because I talk about the 12 worlds, framework as a way to view individual human activity, it seems as if seeing our identities as a 12-sided duodecagon, and I had to look that up a couple of years ago to find out what geometric pattern has 12 sides, duodecagon is the answer. Looking at it as a 12-sided figure makes sense, and frankly, I do it because it's convenient. I could say that we have at least these 12 facets to our identities. So we have a spiritual identity, a mental identity, emotional identity, a physical identity, a family identity. We have a career identity. We have a financial identity, a social identity, a leisure identity, a community identity, a political identity, and maintenance identity. And if you want to know why you behave in a given way in any one of those 12 areas, it is because of the identity that you have created and I have created. I think it's cool. Now, not all those 12 worlds are important to each of us in the same degree. Some, almost not at all. Others, extremely so. And that means it's likely that they have not all been developed to the same level. And if you turn around and look at people who are really, really famous, and I'll take a couple of guys who are infamous, Tiger Woods, Lance Armstrong, they were not balanced. 12 worlds, not balanced. Their careers and their what they would do to win, and Tiger Woods, what he behaved with regard to his mental, emotional, physical, and family. It's like those guys had lots of money, but on the other hand, their values and the way they behaved, way out of balance, way out of whack, to the destruction of their careers. If you would look at that 12 worlds list that I just went through, and you rated your self-approval in each of them, say from 0 to 10, with 10 being the highest, if we did that, we could know pretty quickly where our identity creation could be applied. You say, well, you know what? I need to upgrade my identity in this world, because your level of self-approval, your level of satisfaction, your level of contentment and peace in that world is low, and it would be important to you for it to be high. I think the bottom line is that we all want to be equal at creating and expressing ourselves in these worlds. If you have a career or don't have a career and you want a career, we want to get to the place where we're equal to creating the identity that's going to allow us to have a career that is going to give us the satisfaction, the income, the opportunity to create in the world. Sometimes it seems to me that creation may be simpler than we make it. Maybe it consists of the intention, let there be. Just formulate what it is you want to exist. And then judgment. It is. The Old Testament, let there be, it is good. Maybe we create by our declarations. And I believe the most powerful declarations are those that apply to us and to others. I am healthy. I am successful. I am growing, right? That I am, to me, is the ultimate declaration that creates. You are. Because if we're saying that about somebody else, we're saying it to ourselves. If we're saying he, she, or it is, we're saying it to ourselves. We are, fill in the blank, we're saying it to ourselves. You are, again, it's reflective back to us. And they are, again, we're saying it to ourselves. If we think of that, we are directing our energy into the existence of a given situation, a given manifestation. Maybe that admonition against judging, you know, judge not or you'll be judged, might have to do with the risks of creating things we don't want. feels to me that judgment solidifies energy. And if that's so, then we will want to be very careful about how we use our words. When we judge something as bad, we just solidified it. We judge something as good, we just solidified it. And both of those things will be attractive. I like these words. I am growing spiritually. I am growing mentally. I am growing emotionally. I am growing physically, stronger, healthier. I am nurtured and nourished. I am healing. I am protected. I'm having my needs fulfilled. I am working. I am surviving. I am supported by rhythm, and I am supported by the law of cause and effect. Now, I believe all of those are available to all of us, if we allow it. They're there in the ocean of divine consciousness. Now it's a question of us allowing that to be true. To me, these statements combine the power of the I am statements that I just referred to a minute ago with the impulses that divine consciousness is devoted to our well-being. Divine consciousness is seeking to help us grow, nurture and nourish us, heal us, protect us, have our needs fulfilled, and so on. Now, we, in our efforts to create our own identity, doesn't it make sense that, wait a minute, I'm going to align with divine directions. I'm going to align myself with divine intentions. Makes perfect sense to me, as compared to go against the tide, go against these natural energy flows. I'm a fan of the law of cause and effect. And several of the main points about the law of cause and effect can be seen as relevant to identity creation. If identities that we've created don't include the characteristics that we want, we could say that our identities are the effects of certain causes. My financial identity is not what I want it to be. That is an effect. So we turn around and say, if there's an effect, there's got to be a cause. If there's a cause, there has to be an effect. That idea that if we desire a specific effect, my finances are excellent. We just need to become aware of and skilled at activating the things that cause finances to be excellent. Finances excellent is an effect. How we feel about ourselves is an effect that also becomes a cause. It's almost like a string. Cause, effect, and it follows. Try this as an example. If someone told us the lie that we were stupid, that would be a cause. If we believed that lie, the result would be an effect. They said I was stupid, I'm stupid. Now, that belief could hold us back from trying new things. Say, enrolling in programs to learn something, a new language or a new skill, or taking advanced training in one form or another. Or even expressing our truths or our opinions. Oh no, my opinion, because I'm stupid, I better keep it quiet so nobody notices this truth about me. It's not true about us, it's false. That holding back would be the effect. And if our earnings were connected to this willingness to express or not, we would say, if our earnings were low, that would be the effect of us holding back, which would be the cause. And you just go, cause, effect, which then is another cause, which is then produces an effect, which then produces another cause. The law of cause and effect, known to most people as we reap what we sow, seems to me to be an excellent motivation to constantly seek to elevate, to upgrade the ways we sow. If we're going to reap what we sow, we want to be a better sower. And how do we sow? Through our thoughts, our words, our feelings, and our actions. Of course, our goals are to create what we want, create and express ourselves, to produce results, which of course are effects that are desirable to us and to others. We can only create and express what our consciousness, our awareness, our identities, and our beliefs will allow. I just referred to one thing, our consciousness, in four different ways. I called the energy of who we believe ourselves to be as consciousness, as awareness, as identities, and as beliefs. They're all bundled together in our consciousness. I'll refer back to that stick figure with the circle around it. That circle, the line, and everything within that are beliefs, superstitions, fears, hopes, dreams, all of our energy exchange experiences, everything we heard, said, saw, tasted, touched, everything, and then some, would all be a part of our consciousness. The reason I'm talking today about identity creation is because it's easier to imagine it as a practical developmental process. Marianne used to say to me, "Tom, you may know what consciousness is, but it is hard for other people to get it." So I said, "How about awareness? That's better. That's better. How about identity?" That's what I'm talking about today. So you could imagine your identity. When you walk into any environment, you're walking in as an identity. When I walk into a store in a little while, I'm walking in as Tom the shopper, Tom the seeker of something. A very close friend of mine recently said that she felt very confident and very comfortable in her element. Her element she was referring to is standing in front of teachers and teaching them how to teach better. And when she brought up that in element and went on to something else, I said, "Well, let's go back to that in your element. Let's talk about that." And it really referred to a certain environment, maybe a certain setting, context, or when we're engaged in a certain set of relationships. Each of us probably feels exactly the same way. I'm confident in my element, but in other situations, I'm not so confident, not so comfortable. I would say, and I did say this to my friend, your identity as a teacher and as a teacher of teachers is obviously highly developed. It's strong because it's been built on many, many positive energy exchange experiences over the course of some 30 plus years. In other words, you know who you are, you know what you're capable of, and you like it. So you can hear the understanding of self and the approval. If we go back to the 12 worlds and choose and say a single aspect of one of the worlds, we could work at it by making it our element and then changing our beliefs about ourselves in that element, in that environment, in that context. For example, if being physically fit and strong is not your element, then baby steps mentally, emotionally, and physically could be pretty easily identified and initiated. Walking instead of riding. People say, instead of jockeying for the position closest to the door of the grocery store, they park further away in the parking lot just to add steps to their day. Lifting everyday objects, making them, instead of avoiding lifting things, maybe using hand weights. I know people who use hand weights, not bought ones, but say milk containers that have been emptied or water containers that have been emptied, filled with water, and now those things serve as weights. No cost, no additional expense, no shopping involved. You have the water container or the milk container and just fill it. It's like, oh, yeah. And all I have to do is practice lifting those. Yep, that's really what it is. Baby steps. Baby steps of progress. Like almost everything else in life, growth happens in very small increments over a long period of time. Now, human beings, being what they are, maybe Americans have this worse than others, the desire for instant gratification. Well, That desire for instant gratification is the enemy of discipline. I tried it once, and I'm not terribly stronger now than I was before I did that 15 minutes of exercise. Yeah. If we think that we're going to arrive at the destination of strong and physically fit after 15 minutes of exercise, we're mistaken, and we're going to be disappointed. So that instant gratification, or the desire for it, is the enemy of discipline and understanding the rhythm of life. Like, I want to get everything I want with 15 minutes of effort, no more, just 15 minutes of effort. Like, that might not be how life works. Yeah. What we're really looking for, and this is what we've got to accept, we have to accept ourselves as capable of growth in the 12 worlds. We're not going to be perfect in any world, not now, not ever, but we do want to be able to grow. And if we find ourselves in our identity as such that we believe ourselves to be capable of growth in the worlds that are important to us, then those baby steps become easier to take. They're not going to be so frightening. They're not going to be something that we have to avoid or fight. We could just start creating and upgrading our identities. So I would ask you, how do you feel about your relationship between you and the power you call God? A lot of people are afraid of that power. A lot of people feel so reassured and trusting that it is only loving and supportive. I would suggest, if that's not how you view it, that may be an opportunity to change your identity in your relationship with that power. How do you feel about your intelligence and your ability to learn? A lot of us in school have been praised for our intellect or degraded for it. How do you feel about your willingness to be emotionally vulnerable and take action and trust that you're protected and supported? That's a huge area, and that goes back into the divine power and that relationship. How do you feel about your body and the various parts of it that may concern you? Lots of people, based upon advertising, find fault with their hair, their nose, their eyes, their eyebrows, their chin, their ears, their skin, their complexion, their breasts, their butt, their legs, their on and on. A lot of that is propaganda that's designed to drive us into buying products and services. But how do you feel about you and your body? How do you feel about your family and your place in it? There's a huge opportunity to elevate your identity. And how do you make your value known in the world? And you know right now that makes you feel good about yourself, and it has an economic impact as well. How do you feel about that? And how do you feel about money flowing into your life and out of your life? If it only flowed one way in, at the end of the day, you're like, well, I can't really eat this money. What do I do with it? Of course, it has to flow out, and you go buy groceries, or you buy other things that are important to the convenience and comfort in your life. And you can go on and on to the rest of the world in that regard. But how you feel about it, and you in those worlds, are what is going to allow you to create the identity that leads to health and happiness and success, meaningful contribution in your life, your ability to allow divine consciousness to work for you, in you, and through you. And as we reach out for a greater understanding of that relationship, we start to really develop the understanding of our identity as an aspect of the divine. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is a pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.